What I want to talk to you about today is all about the gospel. It's about the good news and the love that it has for us. However, with that said, I am not preaching on the gospel that we heard today. And I'm actually, and I confirmed it with my wife at the 9 o'clock service, I'm actually not preaching on any of the scriptures that we heard today. And she and I believe this is the first time in all these years that this has happened. But I'm going to preach the gospel because it's one that needs to be heard. As you very well may be aware of, because you just can't even look anywhere right now, you're aware of the coronavirus. It is the number one news item across the board right now. And with those news items, there is a variety of responses. And these responses and information pieces come everywhere from complete denial of it and what it might mean, all the way to extreme fear and panic to what it might mean. It is truly across the board. I actually had to buy toilet paper yesterday, and if you've tried to buy toilet paper right now, some stores are just out, because that's one of the fear panics that people are doing for whatever reason. They're buying toilet paper and bottled water, and the shelves at the Safeway were very empty, but we were able to get some, thank goodness, because we were actually there needing it, not stocking up for the apocalypse, right? And so This new virus, it gives us, as believers, it gives us a chance to enhance our awareness of what it means to love our neighbor. Okay? It gives us an opportunity to enhance our awareness of what it means to love our neighbor. Currently, St. Paul's, we know all about loving our neighbor. We do it quite well. I mean, we've worked hard to be a place that believes this is a place of belonging for all people, no matter who walks in here, that they belong here to worship here in this community. We believe that. That's loving our neighbor. We also, through our baptismal covenants, believe in respecting the dignity of every human being and seeing Christ in all people. That's ways in which we love our neighbor. We, at St. Paul's, we have volunteers that have, you know, worked out in the emergency winter shelter tent to help those who have nowhere to go stay warm and stay alive during the cold weather. That's helping our neighbor. We have programs that help people wash their clothes, and of course, we feed a lot of people. We're good at loving our neighbor, at least in those understandings. Now, through this virus, we have an opportunity to look beyond those aspects and just broaden our perspective. The act of washing our hands is an act of loving our neighbor. And you would think that we wouldn't need a lesson in that. But clearly, we do need a lesson in hand washing. And having worked in a hospital as a hospital chaplain, for a few years early on, when you think you know how to wash your hands, you really don't. I mean, we really don't. Or we don't take the time to actually do it in a way that if we have a virus on our hands, that we get it off. Okay? Now, there are things that we can do to love our neighbor as we're washing our hands. Well, we can pray for our neighbor while we're washing our hands. We could even pray for our enemies, those who don't like us or those that we don't like. Great opportunity to do that while you're washing your hands. Many people I know already and have been in practice for years say the Lord's Prayer while they wash their hands as a timer. They say the Lord's Prayer. And it's even being suggested that you can sing the doxology, and I'm waiting to hear it in a public bathroom or somewhere, you know, praise God from whom all blessings. You know, it's going to be great to have someone pop that out somewhere. But there are things that we can do to love our neighbor, and washing our hands is actually one of them. And I encourage everybody, I'm not going to give you a demonstration, but I encourage you, if you have access to the internet, to Google how to properly wash your hands. Because most of us don't do it correctly, even come close. Loving our neighbor. Staying home can be loving our neighbor too. Staying home, particularly when we feel that we're sick. Now, our society doesn't allow this. We are driven. We have to go to work. People rely on us, right? We have to get there. We have to do our job. Society doesn't allow it. Some people are blessed with sick leave. Others are not. Some people, if they don't go to work, then they don't get paid. And if they don't get paid exactly their normal hours of a month, their rent doesn't get paid, or their medicine doesn't get purchased, or their food doesn't get purchased, whatever it is. And so society has told us, we go to work. But when we go to work sick, we're not loving our neighbor. We're actually putting our neighbor in harm's way. Same goes to going to church. But I have to go to church. Trust me, God can deal with it if you're not here. I want you here if you're well. I do, because it's really important that we be here together. But if we're sick, or if we even suspect it, stay home. Monitor yourself. And if you need help, then we can get help. This is actually going to spark a new ministry that you'll start seeing, is that because this is a serious thing, this virus is, because our bodies aren't used to it, okay? It's not one that our bodies know, where we adjust to the flu over the years. But no, this is new for us, and so it is serious. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And quarantine is quarantine. I think that's why people are buying so much toilet paper. Not something you want to run out of, right? But we need to be able, as a community, to call and say, I need toilet paper. Or I need juice. I need bread. I need these things, because if you're going to stay quarantined, you need to stay quarantined. And to have a ministry to be able to go purchase those things, have the church purchase them, and have a delivery driver, one of us, go and leave it on the porch. And then you can, if you want to write, you know, a check back for the amount the groceries cost, you donate that back to the church. We might need this, people. And so think about that in the back of your mind, if that's something that you might be able, a way to love your neighbor in the future, if that comes a need. And please call if you're quarantined so that we know. Another aspect of loving your neighbor during this time, this awareness, is of personal space. Many of us love to greet, love to touch, love to shake hands and hug, and we just assume everybody does, right? And so we just go right up to them into their personal space. And we grab their hand without them even extending it. Or we just throw our arms around them and we hug people. Now, right now is a great time to be aware of personal space. Touch is important to me because it's very biblical. Jesus touched people the world said don't touch. Jesus touched people the world said were unclean, were unsafe, were discarded people. So touch is important to me, everybody, the touch. But I also want to say touch is important if it's invited. Got to say that. And if it's appropriate. Because not all touch is invited, and not all touch is appropriate. And so when we approach people here, when we approach people wherever, be aware of their personal space. Be aware of who they are standing there, because what, and you may be the same way, if I'm in just one of those moods and I really don't want to talk to somebody, and somebody's approaching me, the first thing I do is disengage eye contact, and I look down, and I may turn a little. Right? It's subtle, but it's a universal language of no. Please go by me without talking to me. You know, I mean, you know how that is. We need to be aware. That's loving our neighbor if we can honor people. And it's maybe because they're starting to get sick and they don't want to have to tell you that. Right? So we're honoring them in being aware of their personal space. There's other ways to honor people and show connection, because that's what this touch, this shaking hands, this greeting is all about, right? The other thing about touching, the other piece that brings connection is using somebody's name. If you know their name, use it. Look them in the eye, call them by name. There's nothing really more connecting to someone than that. That brings us to times in which we touch each other and greet each other in this space, because what does this virus mean to us here at St. Paul's? Well, as we do in Lent, we make changes, right? I mean, we cover up our images that represent the resurrection. We want to see them, right? So we still can see through the veils, because we are resurrection people. But we make changes. Our liturgy changes. We've already confessed. We did that early, right? There's things we do that say, this is a different time. It's a special time. And so we're going to make some changes. And if I'd have thought about it last week, I'd have done it then. Is during Lent, when it comes to passing of the peace, we're going to do just the little areas that we are. We're not going to wander around. Now, you might go across right there. You know, I'm not going to set boundaries and make grids and stuff, but don't be wandering around to the front, to the back of the church, and all over the place greeting everybody. Let's honor this time as practice and just greet those that are right around us. And I encourage everybody, not going to tell you can't touch each other. Two people are going up to each other and you're like this, yeah, go right ahead. But if one hand's not extended, it's about them honoring, maybe that they think they don't want to give you something. It's not about they don't want to touch me. It could be about all kinds of things. And so maybe during Lent, it's been encouraged that we do other signs. Bow, little bow. It's all, I mean, the intention is still there, but we're not touching. Little bow, you know, we were doing a little hang loose, the nine, with the Islanders in the crowd, you know, doing some I love yous as well. If you're a good hippie, go right ahead and throw the peace sign, you know, whatever it might be. But there are ways in which to greet without actually touching. We're going to try it, but I'm not saying you can't. But if you're going to touch somebody, it needs to be clear that they want to interact in that. Now, it also means at the receiving line after church, I'm not touching you. I'm going to greet you. I'm going to talk to you, but I'm not hugging right now, particularly because I love to do that. It's very Lenten. It's like I feel like I'm beating myself with a book or something. Very Lenten. I'm not going to do that right now because I want to honor you and to love you and to respect and love my neighbor. Post-communion prayer, if you come to the 9 o'clock, we're not holding hands because they normally hold hands. We're staying right in our spots, which is kind of painful for them because, and for us, I mean, that's one of the outward visible signs of St. Paul's, of who St. Paul's was at that service that Tricia and I, when we visited, said, this is a community we can belong to, that we're willing to do that. And so, but we're not doing that at the 9. No hand-holding. Now, receiving the common cup, receiving communion. Bishops are writing all kinds of stuff right now because they're reading that whole spectrum that's out there too, right? Some bishops are total panicked and they are responding a certain way. Other bishops, very relaxed and responding. Others, or not responding actually. Some are not even responding, and others, I think, have found a solid footing, and I'm going to read a couple things in a minute. I will say that, and it's posted out on one of the bulletin boards, that our assisting bishop, Bishop Jim, has sent a letter to the clergy not requiring us, but recommending that we not serve wine at communion. Okay? There are dioceses right now who have come down and said, you will not serve wine at communion. They have made the official order. And when they write these letters, it's just like our rubrics. If you open the prayer book, it says, you may do this. But that also means you may not. You can leave that little prayer out. And so mays and may nots and have tos and commands. And so when they write their bishop letters, a lot of them sound very much like rubrics, because it's actually giving some flexibility to the clergy to not have to do that. So one thing about Bishop Jim is he's our assisting bishop. He's not our diocesan bishop. He had to say he's made a recommendation because he cannot tell us not to. He doesn't have the authority. The people who hold the authority to actually tell us not to is the standing committee of the diocese right now. And so Bishop Jim's job is maybe to talk to the standing committee about that, and probably has. And then he made a recommendation. If the standing committee sends a letter and says we are to stop serving wine, we will stop serving wine. But we're not there yet. Because there's the practical aspect of it. Every flu season, good virus season, I have to have the conversation with somebody, and that's okay, it's good education, that there's been so many scientific studies about the common cup. They've tried to prove that a virus through the common cup can be spread to somebody else. Well, that might be true if you use grape juice, but there is a reason that we use port. Port is fortified wine. It has extra alcohol in it. It kills everything, okay? And when our Eucharistic ministers, they wipe away, they do their training the way they're supposed to, the wine is, it is safe to drink from the common cup. And so that's the practical aspect of it. The theology behind it, I want to read something from John Bancroft. He's a retired Anglican bishop in Ottawa, Canada, and he writes a lot about the Eucharist, and he says this: the common cup is very important. Jesus took one cup and gave it to all his disciples to drink. Perhaps it was the cup of Elijah from the Passover ritual, as some people say, but it was certainly a single cup. He did not merely pour wine into the disciples' individual cups and tell them to take a drink. There is a powerful challenge in this. We are reminded of the agonizing decision that faced Jesus when he was praying before the crucifixion, when he prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want." We're also reminded that in one cup, we cannot drink alone. We drink from a common cup as a strong symbol of unity and our willingness to accept each other. We share our love and our lives as we share the cup. The implications for this, for fellowship and support in our local church, for relationships between the rich and the poor, between different types of communities, and between nations, and for justice, are enormous. The cup of love and unity is unavoidably a cup of sacrifice. There's the theology behind the common cup. Now, like I mentioned, the bishop's letter is out there. He does recommend that we not touch during the peace. Again, recommendation. And that I'm aware he's recommended that we not share the common cup. But we're going to share the common cup for those who want to. And that's the key. And that, because the bishop's writings are all the way across, and if we had one, I would stick to my bishop, because I would be bound under my bishop's orders. I'm not, and so I've been exploring. And so this is from the new bishop, Jennifer Reddall. She's the new bishop in the Diocese of Arizona. Now, I have read so many bishops, some in which I know personally, that have shut everything down, and everybody's situation is different. Not judging. There was a bishop, though, that I kind of shook my head at. kind of poke a bishop here for a second, in that he was like, well, you know, we could always put Dixie cups up in the front with communion in it, and you could just come up and get communion. And I'm like, and he was talking about bread. He wasn't even talking about wine. He was just, that was the bread. And I was like, no, not going there. But this is what Bishop Reddall has to say. Some of my Episcopal colleagues have written letters to their diocese suspending the reception of the cup from clergy and laity. They write in good faith to those in their own diocese, and I respect and honor them in their decisions, as I respect and honor Jim's letter to us with his suggestion. She writes, my understanding of both rubrics and doctrine of the Episcopal Church prohibit me from taking such a step. The practice of withholding the cup from the laity was a crucial issue in the Reformation, and it is not exaggerating to say many people died for us to have the privilege of sharing in both Christ's body and Christ's blood at the Eucharist. However, that does not mean that everyone must partake in communion in both kinds, nor that every person should. Doesn't mean you must. And there's some of you, as you read all about the virus out there, there are categories of people who they say, you know, you should avoid any possible anything. They would even tell you not to be here. Again, choices that you make, they're your choices. And here, you're going to have that choice. If you're sick, I don't expect you to be here. And it's not like, oh, I'm sick, I'm not going to go to the Common Cup. If you're sick, don't be here, right? So when one receives communion in one kind, either bread or wine, one is deemed to have fully participated in the sacrament. This is something that has been practiced by those in recovery for years. They just have the bread. They don't partake in the wine. And as I've done and other clergy have done at the bedside of someone who can't swallow and they can't have the bread, to put a drop of wine on their tongue is just as valid as receiving a full wafer and a drink from the cup. So it's full communion, no matter if you have one or the other. In light of this, I will offer some guidance to clergy and congregations in her diocese. But she says that this is where they are now. Could change. The door's open to make different changes for her, and I think the door's always open for us to make changes and tweaks as well in a variety of ways in which we share common time together. Her instructions are that clergy shall, no choice, offer communion in both kinds to the laity. It's your choice. If you're comfortable in that, do that. If not, there's no shame in not doing it. There's not like I'm in fear of this. If you want to, if you feel called to, do it. If not, don't do it. All of those who are invited that wish to may do so. It says, I encourage all those who are concerned about infection and do not wish to receive the wine to first receive the bread and then stand or kneel with arms across your chest from the chalice as it comes by, and at which the chalice bearer, ours are taught to do this, not always watching, but they're taught to do that, to raise it up, to present it to you, and to say the blood of Christ, the cup of salvation. But we stay in place, but you do that by this and let the cup until it gets passed. She says, I strongly discourage the practice of intinction. Intinction is actually worse than drinking from the common cup. Why? Okay, if you know you're sick and you're drinking from the common cup, that's on you. You shouldn't be doing it anyway, right? But we carry all kinds of things on our hands that we aren't even aware of. And we reach up and we touch the cup, and as we dip in, I mean, all kinds of ways in which we do that. Our hands are filthy. That's why we need to learn how to wash them. But we also disinfect our hand, and then our phone vibrates, and we go, oh, who's that? Our phones are disgusting, too. And we touch them all the time. recommendations of not touching your face, good luck with that. I tried. Doesn't work. We just do it. We can learn to touch it with the back of our hand, but we're still gonna touch our face. So she discourages intinction. I'm not gonna say we're not gonna, at this point, that we're gonna do away with intinction. It's your choice. One thing that might be practical for intinction is instead of putting your palm out for your wafer, put your hand out like this. And we will place the wafer in the pinch. We're not putting it into your hand that you then pick up, grab, and intinct. Just pinch it. And the awareness of, can you see the wine, all of it, when you intinct? We need to be over it, looking down to intinct. Because if you've ever intincted, there are times in which your fingers go a little too deep, or as you're going down, the cup raises up a little bit, and you get a little wine on your fingers. We don't really want wine on our fingers, right? And so just an awareness of that. If you're one who still wants to intinct. She encourages our Eucharistic ministers already to sanitize their hands, which ours do. I do. Those who handle any of the elements wash or sanitize before we ever touch them. And she also encourages the peace, bowing, finding ways in which to connect that aren't touching. She gives all kinds of little hints about how long to wash. The whole 20 seconds thing really isn't long enough if you actually learn how to wash your hands. 20 seconds is a lot longer than most of us wash our hands. But if you go learn how to wash hands, you'll learn that 20 seconds just really isn't long enough. Now, here's a piece that she adds that no bishop has ever told me. However, my wife has. Okay? She kind of giggled when she heard the bishop saying this. My wife giggled. She says, finally, I close up to a message to the clergy. We love our congregations, and we often sacrifice our own health in service to God and the church. This is not the time to do so. I cannot think of a worse situation in the present moment than having a clergy person come to the church on Sunday when they're feeling ill and have the clergy person be the vector through which disease spreads. And I've always tried to be aware of that, but I'm going to be extra vigilant on that. Even if I'm set to be the preacher that day, and if I can't find another priest, because we have often in our congregation other priests, bishop, who are here who could say the Eucharist, even if I can't find that, and if I think at all that I'm ill, I'm not coming in. Okay? Now, with that said, there are those of you who remember the beautiful service of morning prayer, that you grew up with it. Okay? I need people to come in and practice with me how to lead morning prayer. And if some of you have actually done it in the past in liturgical settings, if you want to, you may not ever have to, but if all of a sudden on a Sunday morning, I am not feeling well, and I can't find a priest, we're still gathering, it'll be morning prayer, and I just need some people to learn how to do that. It doesn't have to be the deacon that leads it. And so think about that, pray about that, and talk to me about that, because it's a beautiful service. And all of this, again, as a reminder, is to broaden our perspective and to live into what it means to love our neighbor. Didn't tell the 9 o'clock, forgot to. I often empty the font during Lent. I hadn't, but I did this morning. Because that's also one of the recommendations from the CDC and other health organizations, is that during virus times, we don't have the common dip your hand in and make the sign of the cross fonts. Makes perfect sense. And so I emptied it this morning. There are some rocks in there. So when you forget and you look in, you go, oh, yep, that's why. Instead of going in and going, where's the water? Because, you know, you might forget it's there, but I wanted to point that out to you. There will be a other little tweaks coming, like how we pass the plates. And I don't yet know the best way to do that.